Charlie.
I'm Mandy.
And this is
the Juiciest Bits
Podcast Season
Deuce.
Deuce. It's relevant to today.
It is. Yes, it's very relevant. Good job. I didn't quite keep up with
it. I'm already tying a tight bow around it.
Amazing.
All right. So we're back. Like Father Time in the last battle. We've woken up to sound a trumpet and then toss it into a rising sea before the bad dwarves cause an apocalypse and a new Narnia is created.
It's a real deep cut there.
Oh, yes.
Good job.
Thank you. We both have incredible beards now. My ear hair touches my shoulders.
It's really beautiful. I'm going to braid it later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're both old and sleepy now. Just in life.
Very sleepy.
When someone asks us a question, we're like, hey, what's that, Sonny? I don't know why we're calling people Sonny, but I guess that's the time of life.
I suppose so. It's just, you know, you wake up one day and everyone's name is Sonny. It's just a fact of life.
It always coincides with the time that your hearing starts to go, too.
Yeah, of course.
You're already going deaf, but then you're also like, names don't matter anymore.
No, because they're all going to be Sonny to
you.
Yeah,
and everyone starts mumbling, so you're like, you're not talking clearly. You don't even deserve a name.
Yes, this is your fault.
This is...
Yeah.
Now, there's one thing I've learned about the elderly. It's that age is everyone else's problem.
Yes, it's true. It's true.
All right. So we're doing something different this season.
We are.
We're doing something exciting.
Very exciting.
Yeah. Instead of just talking about whatever movie we want, willy-nilly.
We're still going to do that kind of.
We're still going to do that.
Yeah.
Wait.
So don't worry.
But I'm talking about the difference, though.
Yes, there is a slight difference.
We're going to have sort of like themed groupings.
Yes.
And, you know, since we're not boring people, the themes will still be weird and like the groupings will be quite, you know,
eclectic
and also maybe not real unless you live in our brains.
Yeah. Loose connections here, folks.
The loosest connections. So we're gonna try this whole theme thing because it seems to work for other podcasts and we want to bump ourselves up to at least 5 more listeners.
Well, and I think it'll help us with our callbacks too if we compare and contrast.
This is true. Yeah. More to talk about because we always run out of things to talk about, so we need to start padding our episodes a bit more, I guess. So to start off, we're talking about house movies.
Yes.
Not home movies.
No.
House movies. And I would like to vote that they are all movies with house in the title.
Okay. Yeah.
But I mean, this is a partnership, so you can say what you want. But mm-hmm. I'm here for like Lake House, The Lighthouse.
Ooh.
House of Usher.
House on Haunted Hill.
House on Haunted Hill. Basically, it's just going to be Vincent Price movies.
Yeah. He just had so many house movies.
This is now a podcast dedicated to Vincent
Price.
The
House Bunny.
The House Bunny.
There
and,
are many.
Oh, yeah, no. Oh, wait. Well, there are a number of movies just named House.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
yeah.
And then we could also talk about House, the TV show.
We could.
We can talk about how I didn't understand that it was like some kind of like very loose adaptation of Sherlock Holmes until like very recently. I just thought, well, you know how there's like, it's like a thing now where every single fucking white dude in a TV show has that sort of like vibe of like aggressive self-centeredness and also is talking over everyone and is too smart for the room. You know, it's just a thing now.
And has a pretty big drug dependency as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like, come on. How was I to know? At no point is he like elementary, my dear Watson. I don't think. I also haven't watched very much House.
No, I don't know.
Oh, but he does have his best friend who he's gay with, right?
The guy from Dead Poets Society?
Yeah, that one. Oh. The one with the three names.
Yeah.
Which I think is one name more than you need, but that's just me.
It's just...
selfish.
Just so overdoing it with the names.
It's true. Anyways, And this is all building up to the movie of the day, which is
Roadhouse.
Nice. Good work. Good work. Good work.
Thank you. This was a bit of a request from a devoted listener.
Mm.
Yes. One of our few fans.
We now have a few fans.
We have a few fans. You know who you
Sorry,
are.
Sorry, Veronica, you've been demoted. You're no longer number one.
Well, she can still
you
be.
You were the first.
The president of the fan
You never
club.
Forget your first.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah. So, like, I had never... Okay, this is getting ahead, but, like, what's your history with Roadhouse?
I have no history with Roadhouse. I saw it for the first time on Monday.
Okay, same here. I saw it for the first time on the weekend. What do you think?
I was so mad that I hadn't seen it before because it is a delight. It is such a romp. And it was just like one of those movies. It was made in 1989. So we were both too young to see it when it came out.
I was born this year. So me and the movie are twins.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just sort of was never one that anyone around me watched. So yeah.
Which is a travesty, honestly.
It
like
is.
This movie is boppin'. Also, it has your grandpappy. Samuel Elliott.
Sam Elliott is in it, and we are related. Yeah. It's my claim to fame.
Which is, yeah, no, I mean, so I feel like this is a classic of the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
It's always something that I've, like, heard, like, you know, it's a cult favorite. And I think, I don't know why it just flew under my radar for so long.
Yeah.
Because it has all the elements of things that we both love, you know? Patrick Swayze, Sam Elliott, you know?
Scuzzy bars. Lady Doctors.
Canadian sweetheart Jeff Healey, R.I.P.
That's right. Yeah, that's
Lady Doctors, yeah. Women in the medical profession. Mm-hmm. Good. And it also has mullets.
So many mullets. Oh, and it has blousy blouses and trousers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the blousiest.
Only the best 80s fashion in this movie.
And it has so many tits and butts.
That is true.
Like, at one point I was like, this might be too many. But then I walked it back and it was like, no, more please.
Bite your tongue.
Yeah.
What is too many?
It's impossible. But it's just like very casually, like everyone is naked a whole bunch.
Mostly women.
Mostly women, but there are a bunch of dudes that are naked.
There are.
And we don't see full frontal, but like we do see a lot of side and back.
Yeah, that's true.
Actually, no, take that. We do see full front. Oh, no, but lady full frontal.
Yeah.
We see some powerful merkins.
We sure do.
Yeah. I was happy about that.
It's the 80s. Hair was bigger in the 80s.
Even fake hair was bigger.
Yep.
Especially fake hair was bigger.
Oh, yeah. Gotta make it look real.
Oh, my God. No, I was just struck by how there's, like, almost like a childlike sensibility to this movie where it feels like, yeah, because everything is bigger and hammier. It's like, this is in no way like how anyone in real life talks or reacts or does anything. So like, you know, the grungy bars are just like a shade grungier than they would actually be, you know, like, the health department would shut them down. Like there's things that are sort of just like always inflated beyond reality to like a level that's like, oh yeah, what if we made something like as tough as possible but also cool?
Yeah. And like dressed our hero in white silk.
Yeah.
Even though he works in bars that are prone to fights.
And he's very prone to fights.
And he's very prone to fights as well. Yeah.
And he's like a magnet for people who want to fight him.
Yeah.
So the amount of silk shirts that like go to their graves in this movie
far
exceeds the body count, I think.
Yeah.
Just sadness. May I jump into a summary?
Please jump into a summary.
Okay, wait. First, before that. Okay. So if you had to categorize this movie, what are some keywords that you would use?
Oh. Well, it's definitely a fight movie.
Yeah. fight.
It kind of becomes a revenge movie.
Mm-hmm. Revenge.
There's some romance.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Mullets.
Mullets, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mullets and fashion.
Okay.
It's very into
revenge,
fashion.
Fight, romance, fashion.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. What All about right. you?
Well, no, I would say the same, but Amazon Prime has a different listing.
Oh.
Let me read this listing to you.
Please do.
So they file this movie under suspense. Yeah, okay.
Well.
Drama. Okay. Fine, sure, whatever. Electrifying.
Oh.
And malicious.
Don't they mean mulletlicious?
You should write an email to Mr. Amazon himself.
I might. I You're might like, just.
Sir, you incorrectly labeled Roadhouse. First of all, consider dedicating your entire platform to Roadhouse. Secondly,
you are describing only the billionaire.
Yes.
There are other characters.
Well, it's not telling. Anyways.
It is telling.
All right, so off we go.
Off we go.
The movie starts with some rockin' tunes and some hot babes walking into a building that looks like it will eventually become an Applebee's in a mall parking lot. But for now, it's a cool hip bar packed with patrons who are just throwing around $100 bills like it's nothing. And this was the 80s. $100 bills really meant something.
Yeah. Yeah,
really meant really something.
Did. Yeah.
Also, there's a lot of shots of women's butts and cleavage, and that establishes the first important theme of this movie, which, as discussed, is butts and boobs.
Yeah.
So we're in this fun bar, and then a fight breaks out when a dude literally kicks a woman to the floor and then pulls a knife on her. And honestly, like, Tuesday nights must have been, like, really hopping back in the 80s. Like, this is wild stuff already. So hot stuff, John Dalton, that's Patrick Swayze, walks over and tells the bouncers to get this dude out of there. But angry dude will only get out of there if he can fight Dalton man on man. Gay. So Dalton, like, he literally is like, I've always wanted to fight you.
Yeah, this there are very homoerotic undertones throughout this whole movie.
Oh, I would not say undertones.
Okay, overtones.
I would say overtones. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Dalton agrees to the fight, but then wins extra chill points by, like, literally kicking him out and then walking away, even though said angry dude cut him with a knife on his beautiful body and ruined the first of his many beautiful blousy shirts.
It's true.
Garbage successfully taken out, Dalton goes to a back room to sew up his wound, when in walks another dude who has been eyeing Dalton the whole evening. Oh my god. And was very impressed by his pacifism in the face of sartorial carnage. This dude's name is Tillman, and he's the owner of a scuzzy bar in some other town, but he's trying to clean it up to, quote, protect my investment. Not for, like, health and safety and, like, you know, public whatever, whatever.
No.
He's just like, my building's getting trashed. I don't like it. Wow. And since Dalton is the best cooler in the business, and just, like, what does that mean? In the world? In,
yeah.
Like, the U.S.? The state of Kansas?
I think it clearly means in the world.
But is there a list somewhere? Who's tracking this data?
Maybe there is. I don't know.
Is there competitions?
You found a flaw.
The one flaw in this perfect movie. Anyway, so Tillman has come all this way to offer him a job because he's the best. For reasons we don't know, but, you know, maybe it could just be his hair. He's just smitten. After naming his salary expectations, Dalton agrees to the offer, even though the bar is called the Double Deuce. Which, come on, that's like a red flag right there. Like, just call it Extra Poopy and we'll, like, move on.
That was the name of the cool bar when I was growing up.
No!
It was in a mall.
Oh, a mall bar.
Yeah, it was really sad.
Double Deuce.
The Double Deuce.
What? Is that a... That's a poker thing, probably, right?
Probably.
Because I'm a child, so I was immediately like, poop.
Yep.
But, wow. No one hears that in the movie. As Tillman leaves, he looks Dalton up and down and says the immortal line, I thought you'd be bigger. And
which
this,
is repeated many times.
Yeah, establishes the second important theme of the movie, which is normal dudes talking to each other, having this, like, smirking underlying sexual tension. It also happens in, like, the aggressive, like, you know, scenes where dudes are staring each other down. And it looks like they're just making eyes at each other. But it's particularly noticeable in the casual moments because there's nothing else happening. And it's so out of place. It's just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Ugh, straightest, gayest movie. So Dalton goes home, gives away his car, and then drives off in a different car. Third theme of the movie is car. To the Double Deuce. Seemingly all that very night, even though Tillman had offered him a plane ticket to get there.
Yeah.
So it all happens very fast. Space is relative. When Dalton gets to the Double Deuce, it is comedically, like Looney Tunes level terrible. There are people smashing glasses over each other's heads, which, does that ever happen in real life?
Like, I've never been to any place where that was happening.
You have to, like, just have so much strength.
Yeah.
Or just, like, powered by pure rage, I guess.
Yeah.
But, wow. All right. So smashing glasses over each other's heads, casual nudity. At what point a little boob fondling turns into an outright brawl. It's, like, the exact vision of what my conservative Christian upbringing told me to believe bars were on, like, normal nights.
Maybe your family had seen this movie.
Maybe they had. And this is also why going to a bar still feels anticlimactic to me now. I'm like, where is all the sinning?
I was told there would be sinning.
I was told there'd be sinning here.
It's all up to you.
Just like a bunch of people sitting around drinking beverages. Boring. So Dalton just stands around taking it in because this is simultaneously the most dysfunctional and also the most well-lit bar ever.
It's extremely well-lit.
It is, yeah.
Disturbingly so.
Like, it hurt my eyes watching it a little bit. As word gets around the room about who he is, we see his legend grow. People talk about how he's a super tough guy, how he killed a guy once by ripping his throat out with his bare hands. You know, all that bullshit.
As one does.
Again, much harder to do, I would imagine, than just, like, you know, yoinking.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah. Not I mean, a very good go-to way of killing. I don't know for sure, but...
You're no murder expert,
but... I'm no murder expert, but that wouldn't be the first, like, my first thought.
Have to be easier ways and tools and things. Yeah. Yeah, surely. Yeah. Next day, Dalton buys another car. Car. And also rents a waterfront loft apartment over a horse stable from an old guy named Emmett. Then he starts his first day of work at the DD by firing a bunch of people saying, it's my way or the highway, and then talks about how the key to being a good bouncer is just being nice. So real mom boss energy from Dalty here. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's like, be nice, be nice. And they're like, what if I can't be nice? And he's like, be nice anyway. I'm like, okay, mom. So everyone who hasn't been fired yet agrees to be nice, but then Dalton catches one of the bouncers later on, fully naked fucking a girl in the storeroom. Yes. And of course fires him because there's no way anyone would look that dude in the face again. And then also catches the bartender skimming and fires him. And at the end of the shift, Mr. Tillman is happy saying, it was a good night, no one died. Which, my dude, raise them standards a little. Oh boy. Next morning, one of the bar servers barges into Dalton's loft bedroom where he's sleeping naked. More casual nudity. With the pretense of bringing him breakfast, but really just to tell him that he's a dead man for firing the bartender. Because, turns out, major plot point. Sleazy bartender is actually the nephew of the man who owns the town. Brad Wesley.
Mm-hmm. The most 80s name imaginable. The
most 80s name. Yeah, it's, you know, a Mr. Potter for a new era. Dalton is more bothered by the breakfast than her warning, so he goes off to do some sweaty Tai Chi while wearing some very tight sweatpants. Back at the bar, sure enough, the bartender returns with some of his uncle's goons to coerce wimpy Mr. Tillman to let him come back and, you know, I guess continue stealing from him. And they try to justify this because Brad Wesley apparently supplies the booze, so it's a package deal. Like, the bar gets an in-house distributor of the booze, so, you know, if there's no nephew to pour the booze, there's no booze to have. I have questions about this arrangement, but then so does Dalton, who won't be pushed around, even when sleazy ex-bartender nephew pulls out a Bowie knife.
Yeah.
And it looks like the moment from Return of the King when Aragorn hauls out the sword that has been reforged, and it's like this, like comedically large knife suddenly appearing in frame.
Yeah, I was like, where was that?
How was that in his pants? Yeah. Surely it wasn't. Yeah, no, my God. No. Who knows?
Impossible.
So sleazy ex-bartender nephew stabs poor baby. And then another fight ensues, and Dalton successfully kicks. He doesn't kill yet.
Ooh. Stand by.
Spoiler. Kicks the bad dudes out and then goes to the hospital to get stitched up. At the hospital, Dalton meets hot Dr. Kelly Lynch. She has a real name, surely. Right?
Somebody call Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
But she's billed as Doc, I think.
And you know what? Even after they literally fuck, mm-hmm. Dalton calls her Doc.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no. That's like 100% of her personality is that she's a hot doctor.
Yeah.
A walking fantasy. Anyway, so they really hit it off talking about Dalton's medical record and how he has a degree in philosophy from NYU. And she's also one of the people who's like, I thought you'd be bigger. we then have some scenes of hot doctor and Dalton as they go on some very boring dates. And also win second place for most uncomfortable movie sex.
Yeah.
Do you know what first place award goes to? It really sticks in the brain. It's my body aches when I think about it.
Oh, is it, what's it called? Can't think of it.
Mm.
The one with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman.
Oh, Eyes Wide Shut. No, yeah. It isn't. But, that is like also a good choice. Okay, the one I'm thinking of is The Thomas Crown Affair. When Pierce Brosnan and Rene Russo do it missionary style on his marble staircase.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, no, no. I like, you know, think about it and my back immediately starts like so crumbling. Cold. So painful. Can you imagine? No.
I cannot.
Don't even want to imagine.
Listener, I cannot.
Anyway, so they have sex. The hot doc and Dalton have sex against a rocky fireplace wall.
Yeah, it
when there's
not
a
look
bed right there. Yeah, no. So I was like, again, no. What are you doing? There's a bed like three steps away. Move it.
Yeah.
Don't like sand her back against your weird fireplace.
Yeah.
No, thank you. Anyways, sensible sex doesn't sell. I guess.
I guess not.
People have a nice, comfy sex.
Just people who have never had to have their backs against anything.
Actually, yeah, no, you're right. This is the connection bit. Like, all the dudes making this movie who are like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. just think about
it. The rest of us are like, oh, no. Oh, I feel, oh, no.
Dude, it's so pokey and scratchy.
So pokey. No, don't lay on top of those books. No. Yeah, no. Oh, not the kitchen counter.
We make food there.
We make food there.
So unsanitary.
You're going to clean that after, right? Don't make pasta immediately. Gross. Anyways, so all of this is intercut with scenes of Dalton being shown how the whole town really is under Brad Wesley's boot. So we have scenes of local small business owners getting their stores smashed since they aren't paying dues and so on. As things keep getting worse between Dalton and Wesley, ironically, the bar keeps looking better, though. So eventually it looks like an upscale Chuck E. Cheese for adults.
That's exactly what it looks like.
Doesn't it? Yeah. No, it's amazing. I love it. Wade Garrett, who's Sam Elliott, rolls into town to reconnect with his protege Dalton. And okay, another question about the cooler business. There is like mentor proteges?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess.
I guess when you go to cooler school, they're like, here's your mentor. Here's your mentee.
Here's your hot daddy. So anyways, he's checking up on Dalton and he steps in to help. As Dalton's once again getting beaten up by Wesley's goons, this time over a new shipment of alcohol, because he is successfully outsourcing. Wade and Dalton then take Hot Doc on a thruple date, and we get to see a little bit of Sam Elliott's bush. But we barely get to enjoy this moment, because then it's just nonstop cycle of violence from here on out. The local hardware store gets burned up by Wesley and his goons, who then take over the Double Deuce and smash the place up too. Poor sweet Emmett, is dragged out of his burning house after Jimmy sets it on fire. Jimmy's Wesley's right-hand man and also possibly you know, lover. Which then spurs Dalton into killing Jimmy in a fight. Wesley retaliates by killing Wade. Ugh, gone too soon. Forever in our hearts. Dalton then goes on a murder spree by picking off all of Wesley's goons one by one, before then almost killing him in his own taxidermy room. But then all of the other small business owners, all dudes obviously, show up and each fire a shot at Wesley with his own hunting guns. And Wesley, for a, you know, small but feisty guy, takes a lot to be put down.
Yeah, yeah.
They, like, it looks like sawed off shotgun, like, explode, like, you know, like the, like,
bird shot.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And he takes, like, four of them to the chest before he falls.
At least.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's nuts. Anyways, cops show up, classic style, too late for anything. everyone hides the evidence. And then as the credits roll, Dalton and Hot Doc go skinny dipping in a pond.
To celebrate.
To celebrate. They own the town now.
I think it's Brad Wesley's pond.
It is Brad Wesley's pond. Yeah.
And also the pond where Jimmy died and was floating around.
Oh my god, there's dead body pond. Yeah. No, ew. Yeah.
That disturbed me.
That, oh, I didn't even think of that. That is gross. Ew.
Yeah.
Wow, there's a lot of history in that pond. Maybe that makes it special.
Yeah.
So for a movie about cleaning up a bar, what's the body count, do you think?
Oh.
I genuinely don't know, but I feel like it's probably 15.
Have no idea. Yeah.
People, like, most of this movie is people fighting.
Yeah. And, like, getting, if not dead, seriously injured.
Oh, yeah. Maimed. Bonked on the head, yeah. Tossed in,
broken,
you know.
Broken limbs. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
The whole bit.
Mm-hmm.
Shivved with, like, all manner of weaponry.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then shot.
Yeah. Shooting is so anticlimactic in this movie because we're so used to
the elaborate fight scenes, yeah.
Including when we see Dalton actually rip out Jimmy's throat.
I think I was, you know, too scared to watch.
Yeah, he rips out his throat. Yeah.
I didn't clock that. I'm a terrible film.
He has this, like, claw. And he's just like, rawr, and rips out his throat somehow because he has knife fingers or something. Claw. Yeah, it's like, yeah, somebody does it actually in the movie. They're like, this is how he does it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. Wow. Okay. So at least 30 people, maybe, probably.
Yeah. I think that's maybe conservative.
Conservatively 30 people. Yeah.
The casualties are many.
They are many. Yeah. Let alone the destruction of property.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that the Double Deuce keeps getting better because it is, like, nightly destroyed.
Yeah. Well, and Dalton is getting paid $5,000 up front and $500 per night.
Where does Tillman get this money?
No idea.
Because, okay. Yeah. Because it is very unsettling that he just swans in and is like, do this weird arbitrary thing that I won't have any, like, I'm not gonna be involved really.
Yeah, you're the boss now.
You're the boss now. I'll just, like, ride with whatever you say. And yeah. But, like, he's also, like, really easily cowed by the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. Tillman was a real, you know, enigma wrapped in a mystery. Wrapped in a secret.
Yeah, like, his only role was, like, I own this bar and I'm hiring you.
Yeah, he's sort of like a sugar daddy for Patrick Swayze, yeah. Almost, like, where it's just like, I'm giving you an arbitrary task and also a lot of money.
Yeah, he's barely a character.
Yeah, he does wear great bolo ties though.
He does. I noticed, gotta give him that. Oh yeah, like, Charlie would like that
bolo. Oh yeah, no, I appreciate it for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you want to talk about?
Well,
there's a lot of things.
There's a lot of things. Obviously, I think, we could talk about homoeroticism and masculinity in this movie. We could talk about, the nature of fighting. We could talk, mm-hmm, about Dalton's sort of tenets of be nice and his drinking of black coffee. But I did want to introduce you to something that I found earlier today.
Tell me.
In a book called The Routledge Handbook of Shakespeare and Global Appropriation, which came out in 2020 bit of a mouthful.
Okay, put on your thinking caps, folks.
A scholar called Matthew Kosciuszko, or Kosciuszko, wrote a chapter called Beyond Appropriation, Teaching Shakespeare with Accidental Echoes in Film. And in this chapter, he talks about how he uses Roadhouse to teach Hamlet. And let me tell you more about this.
Oh, so, my God.
At first, I was like, what?
What now? Yeah, okay.
But his whole thesis is around Dalton's, he says, to be nice or to not be nice, right? It's sort of like the Hamlet, yeah, to be or not to be. And he says the movie is all about Dalton arriving at the moment where he accepts that it's time to not be nice.
Mm-hmm.
And if you will indulge me, I'll just read you.
Please, I am fascinated by this.
So, I mean, this author all obviously knows that they're not analog. They're not the same, right?
Yeah.
But he writes, there are also plenty of specific parallels and analogs. First, Dalton has only a last name, or maybe a first name. It's not entirely clear. But like Hamlet, he's got only one name. Who is that guy? Everyone in the film keeps asking. It is I, Dalton the Dane. He also has a degree in philosophy from NYU, which might as well be Wittenberg as far as the town of Jasper is concerned.
That's right.
He is a thinking man among drinking men, preferring black coffee over alcohol at work, though given his life in the bar business, he is certainly native there and to the manor born. Like Hamlet, he is beloved of the distracted multitudes, especially the women who populate the margins of the bar scenes. He is laconic and brooding and aloof. He does Tai Chi in his garden, which works as the equivalent of fencing, and which comes in handy when he gets into a duel down by the river that separates his rented loft from the estate of evil patriarch Brad Wesley. Wesley, the Claudius analog, sends a henchman to dispatch Dalton, leading to a set-piece mixed martial arts fight in a sandpit by the river. The henchman eventually produces a handgun. Like Laertes, he is determined to win a fair fight by being unfair. But Dalton disarms him and then uses his bare hands to tear out the henchman's throat. The laconic reserve turns to fury. So.
Wow.
So he uses this. He uses Roadhouse to teach sort of the nature of Hamlet's personality and the ways in which the characters are motivated.
Uh-huh.
And I just think that's so interesting.
That is brilliant.
Yeah. So it's definitely making me think about the nature of story and how contemporary texts always have some sort of grounding in older texts, even if they don't mean to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is like something like Hamlet is so deep in our subconscious now, like our collective subconscious.
Yeah.
That it's now, yeah, working its way up in all of these odd little moments. And I think, yeah, no, that's spot on. And I think Hamlet has so much to say about masculinity,
mm-hmm,
and like family honor, and like all of these things are like, yeah, so bound up in how we understand masculinity now.
Yeah.
And this movie Roadhouse is like, in many ways, it feels like a callback to an even older, like it's like a Western structure, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's referencing movies that are like, you know, even older, and even with like more sort of like codified like masculinity,
mm-hmm,
and ways of exchange within these like prescribed gender roles.
Yeah, which is such a.
Which is like also a callback to Hamlet.
Yeah, and storytelling tradition in general in, mm-hmm, the Western tradition. I mean, he even makes reference to Doc as the Ophelia character and how the only reason she doesn't kill herself is because he ends up not killing Wesley at the end and thus kind of saving himself from going too far over the edge.
Oh, interesting.
So he can get the girl because he stops himself.
Okay.
So unlike Hamlet, he actually is able to pull back and do what she wants.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but also, I mean, if you think of the character of Ophelia, like, she's given precious little agency. Mm-hmm. Doc is given very little agency. I mean, at the end, she's just a damsel who needs to be rescued.
Mm-hmm.
So the structure is there. And I think even if you haven't read Hamlet, or even don't think you know anything about Hamlet, probably you've heard To Be or Not to Be.
Mm-hmm.
You've definitely heard of, you know, evil stepfather comes in and ruins kingdom and usurps the throne. Like, you've heard stories like this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Hamlet.
Yeah. The original motherfucker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just trying to live up to his dead dad.
Yeah. Who is taunting him from the afterlife still.
Yeah.
Which is also classic masculinity. Just, yeah, like always being overshadowed by what went on before. And not being able to live up to someone's expectations, even when they no longer exist.
Mm-hmm.
Like the impossibility of trying to, like, satisfy a ghost for Hamlet.
Yeah.
Is, like, the impossibility of trying to, like, you know, live up to a masculine ideal of, like, perfection and chivalry and honor and also, like, you know, aggression when it is time, but also prescribed within, like, really, you know, contained.
Yeah.
Yeah, like rules.
So then if we keep this sort of analog going, would Sam Elliott's character kind of be the dad figure who becomes that ghost that Dalton has to live up to?
I think so. Yeah, for sure.
Because it's, yeah, they're very close. He is a kind of a father figure, even though I don't think he's that much older. But he's treated as older.
A lot is made of how he's, like, an old man. And people call him dad a lot. Which, yeah.
more like daddy.
But they don't actually look that different in age. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it is his death that, like, sort of spurs Dalton to go on, mm-hmm, his, you know, murder spree at the end.
Yeah.
So
to not be nice.
Even to not be nice.
Yeah.
And he uses, like, the knife that stabbed Wade,
yeah,
to hold down the pedal, the gas the pedal car. Of the car.
So he's kind of ghost driving the car.
Oh my god.
Yes. I love it. I love it so much. Yes. Shakespeare is everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah, I like that.
That's so interesting. Because, yeah, this movie does really... The central issue of niceness and like, I guess, like, self-containment or, like, self-possession is, like, a constant theme that runs through. So Dalton tells all of the bouncers at this place, like, if you like fighting, essentially, like, this isn't the job for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you have to be, like, sort of immovable, like, nothing can permeate you, just, like, have this sort of pleasant, like, facade, and do what you have to do, but, like, you know, don't let it penetrate anything.
Yeah.
But then he, like, for the second half of the movie, he lets everything get to him.
Yeah.
And he's just becomes, like, the most reactive live wire of all, to the point where at the end, when he's trying to convince the doc to run away with him, he's like, Brad Wesley's crazy. And she's like, and you're not? Like, she's like, you're, like, fucking the same.
Yeah.
Like, you're also a maniac, and this is now, like, nonsense what's happening.
Yeah, and he so clearly goes against his own code. I mean, the rules he gives, all the rules he gives to the bouncers are, expect the unexpected. Which he somehow does not.
Yeah.
Take it outside, which
he never does.
Never does. And then, yeah, be nice. And he tells them, you know, I'll tell you when to not be nice.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in charge of their emotions.
Yeah.
But he can't be in charge of his own. It's like he has tried to harness them, and then all of a sudden, he's too emotional to do his job properly.
Yeah, for real.
Which then is a very interesting thing, because that's a trait usually attributed to
women.
Women.
Yeah.
And yet, Dalton is, you know, the
manliest man.
The manliest man in the movie. Yeah.
I also wondered if that alignment with, niceness and like sort of not rigidity, but like sort of impassivity in the face of conflict, or just not like not letting it touch you, was also maybe like a classist thing. Mm. Where because he's got this like, you know, fancy degree and whatever, whatever, he's clearly sort of like in a separate category as all of these like working class schmoes.
Yeah.
So he's also the one who can like dictate like, oh yeah, this conflict doesn't matter. You know, all you have to do is just like make it not matter and it won't matter. And is sort of like able to like, you know, he has like the privilege essentially of mm-hmm. making these arbitrary distinctions for people, like, you know, for them.
Yeah, he has the privilege of sort of this soft guy persona.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, he has a philosophy degree. He wears these loose-fitting clothes. He does Tai Chi by a pond.
In tight-fitting
like,
clothes.
In tight-fitting, in lace-up sweatpants, which I didn't know were a thing.
I didn't know that was a thing.
And, either. You know, with his hair blowing in the breeze. And he's just this... All of these sort of soft, gentle things, but he also has a history of ripping guys' throats out. Like, he's...
And it's also an act. Like, we see so clearly that...
Yeah, it's such an act.
Mm-hmm.
Because he also doesn't mind living in a barn with no door. Like, it's almost as though in his private life he doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe in his private life, that's where he does care. And in public, that's where he can put on his tough guy persona.
Yeah. I don't know. I just kept thinking about, like, like, how he lives life very simply, but also, like, really disposably?
Yeah.
Like, the fact that he has, like, his backup cars to take to work so that they can get smashed, and then he leaves his, like, you know, fancy car at home.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, like...
And, like, gets extra tires when he gets a new car because he knows his tires are going to be slashed.
Yeah.
And can just pick up and leave whenever he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's very nomadic.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't seem to have a lot of connections besides Wade.
Yeah.
I
mean, he sort of knows, like, he knows other people in the biz. Like, he knows the Jeff Healey character.
Yeah.
Who, like, they've encountered each other from past, you know, bars, I guess, mm-hmm. or whatever. They're all in this, like, kind of circuit, you know, running into each other every so often.
Yeah. And the Jeff Healey's character, Cody? Is his name Cody?
Maybe.
Something like that. Kind of serves as the wise... You know, the sage, the
blind seer.
The blind seer, exactly. Which,
or like the chorus, essentially.
Yeah.
Like in a Greek play, where they're like, oh, he's so big and strong, but what's coming around the corner?
Mm-hmm.
Watch yourself, the gods don't like it.
Yeah. But yeah, so he has that sort of like advice giver role, but also the...
Like public commentator.
Public
almost.
Commentator, yeah. And he is treated very much like... Like, he is blind, so he sees all.
Yes. Yeah, for real.
Yeah. Which is a really, Yeah. I'm sure there is much to say about disability in this movie as well.
Yeah. I mean, I don't feel like I know enough about disability theory to, like, speak knowledgeably on it. I was just, like, glad that if there was a blind character, it was at least played by a blind human.
Yes.
Rather than like
so rare.
Someone who, yeah, well, exactly. Even now, it's like, you know,
yeah.
Just wear dark glasses and pretend.
Yeah.
So that was like sort of the one thing that I felt like it was in its favor, regardless mm-hmm. of however else it's like tokenized or
for sure. Know. Yeah, it's, and I mean. Not that it's ever excusable, but movies in the 80s were all about tokenizing people.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I thought it was very surprising that they would actually cast mm-hmm. Jeff Healey to play a Jeff Healey type.
Mm-hmm.
And sit him behind the chicken wire on stage so that, you know, beer would get splashed on him. And people would come up and dance and grind on him, and he was there for the music.
Yeah.
And I think that was interesting too, is he wasn't making as much as Dalton, presumably, but loved what he did so much that he did play at these scuzzy bars.
Yeah, he's there before Dalton arrives, and Dalton doesn't even know that he's there, but he's like the house band of the Double Deuce already.
And they stay.
And they stay on,
Even through all of the nonsense.
So this is a side note, but I was like consistently in awe at how, you know, even if they're not, they're probably really playing there, you know, right? Yeah, okay. It's not like, you know, dubbed or whatever.
The singing might be, but playing. No, I think it was all, I'd have to go back and check.
But just how, like entirely unreactive they were. Like, these dudes are pros.
Very much so.
Like, there's absolute shenanigans happening, like, every single time that they're playing on stage.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, like you're saying, like, people, like, grinding up on them and people dropping bottles of beer on their heads.
Yeah. Like, I bet they missed that chicken wire.
Oh, for sure.
Which used to be a thing in scuzzy bars.
I didn't know that.
My dad told me. Well, we were watching Blues Brothers, and they have a stage like that in the Blues Brothers.
That's right, yeah.
And I was kind of laughing at it, and my dad told me that he had played bars like that. And
so he'd been out behind the chicken wire.
Yeah, so that when people threw bottles, they didn't get hit with bottles. They got hit with beer, but not bottles.
Holy shit, dude.
Because it was just like a thing.
Wow. Like these, to throw your beer at the performers.
Yeah, these roadhouses are tough places.
Okay.
And they are not your, you know, your average city bar.
Okay, so you're telling me that actually this movie is, like, reality.
As far as I've been told.
Okay.
At least it was in the 70s, according to my dad.
Okay.
Who played a lot of scuzzy bars in the 70s. So.
All right, well, I take it all back. I was not alive in the 70s, so I can't.
Neither was I.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it was still the same in 1989.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But also, this is another thing. A lot of movies, I think, we're so used to seeing them set in cities.
That's right.
And it's very different seeing them set kind of in the middle of nowhere. This town of Jasper, which seems to be like barely
population
a town.
500, essentially.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, it has like, you know, three stores or whatever.
One
entirely devoted to boats.
Yeah. I believe it is just called Boats. So yeah,
guess like, what it says on the bottle.
This is not anywhere near a city. So it could be that we're just letting our urban experience,
city snobbery, color everything.
Yeah, but I think that's another, because Dalton was educated at NYU in philosophy. He's kind of bringing this.
Oh, this like city slicker, like,
like, be nice. Like, no, they're not going to be nice. They don't want to be nice.
Well, and it's nuts because then you see these bouncers, like, try and do what he tells them, and then they get absolutely beaten up.
Yeah.
Until Dalton is sort of like, ah, whatever, you can, like, you know, try plan B. But, like, it's essentially them just being like, you know, lambs to the slaughter until he's like, maybe not then.
Well, like the scene when the guy comes in with a knife in his boot.
Yeah.
Right? He has one of those boots that has a knife that comes out of the toe.
Yeah.
And so that you can kick people and do a lot of damage. And Dalton sees that and immediately intervenes.
Yeah.
Because it's like he knows that no amount of being nice
is gonna stop
like turn that guy around immediately because things are gonna go bad.
Also, there's a lot said about like, oh, how Dalton should be bigger for being in this business or whatever. But anyways, like, most of his bouncers are his size or smaller.
Yeah.
There's only one actual big guy named Bear. I love him forever. He's perfect. Real trans mask energy about Bear, I thought.
Beautiful Bear.
But Bear is sort of the only one who's like a bigger dude who can like feasibly take these folks.
Mm-hmm. And he is so nice.
And he's the nicest. But yeah, like most of them are just like skinny, runty, like, little white boys who, like, yeah, what the fuck are they gonna do? Be nice, ask politely, and then just, like, you know, walk away?
Yeah.
It's a wild thing.
But at least they're, I mean, at this new and improved Double Deuce, they're in uniforms, so they do look sort of like a team.
Right.
Although Dalton is never in uniform.
Yeah.
But they're all wearing the shirts, they're all sort of a pack.
Yeah.
And they seem to travel as a pack. So there is this sort of sense that some change is happening, even if it's internal.
Yeah.
But externally, it's kind of like the Double Deuce becomes its own sort of safe haven for people who just want to have a good time.
Yeah.
Like, no ne'er-do-wells allowed.
I mean, except when Brad Wesley's goons, like, come in. Okay,
so yeah.
This leads me to one of the other things that I wanted to talk about, which is how the treatment of, I mean, there's, like, very few women in this movie. but how the, each of the, like, sort of big fights or big moments of conflict, particularly in the bar, is always something that happens right after, like, something with a woman.
Mm.
So it's either a woman gets on stage and starts stripping, or a woman gets on a table and starts dancing, or there's that boob groping scene where the, like, boyfriend is like, hey, you want to touch my girlfriend's tits?
Yeah.
You know, starts very pleasant and then devolves. but I just thought it was really interesting that that, like, is always the trigger point for these massive fights.
Yeah.
And it sort of has its, like, larger echoes in how each time Dalton and Hot Doc go out, like, it's sort of followed by a scene of, like, Brad Wesley, you know, causing more shenanigans.
Yeah. Well, I'm really struck by the level of like, the attitudes of men in this movie who seem to feel as though they own the women, right? Like, Wesley's girlfriend, who keeps shining up to Dalton.
Denise.
Does this striptease on stage and seems to own her body, her sexuality, and fights ensue. She flirts with Dalton. She gets beat up. The woman whose boyfriend is offering her breasts to be groped, she seems just as into it.
Yeah.
And Doc, too, seems to have an idea of who she is and how she wants to be treated. And yet, the men are so busy fighting over them. I mean, one other thing that struck me...
Well, this is what I wanted to, like, point out, that, like, aside from the opening scene where the woman is, like, actually getting, like, actively threatened with that knife, she's kicked on the ground, and, like, most of the other times, like, it seems like the women are just, like, doing a thing that they want to do, and then the dudes, like, massively overreact around them.
Yeah. Well, so I was really struck, first of all, I was struck by the pickup lines. Because those are so bad, but really go to show the confidence of these dudes. So one that I heard was, how about we go nipple to nipple?
Okay, so I don't maybe understand sex.
I don't think that's the problem.
Is that a new move?
I don't know.
Well, and then her rejoinder is, I can do that without you? And I was like,
yeah.
I'm more confused now.
Maybe she's...
She's squishing hers together?
I don't know. Maybe they're on two different planes of... But my favorite pickup line...
Oh my god, I think I know what you're going to say.
Which is also, spoiler, my moment of joy, is when some guy says to this woman... I get off at 2, and I'd like to get you off about a half hour after that.
Oh my god, you're missing the best part, which is what he says afterwards.
What does he say afterwards? I was maybe too busy laughing.
Okay, so I want to get you off half an hour after that.
Yes.
And then as the camera sort of pans away, you see the tail end of it. He's like, my God, you're a put together woman.
Just what every woman wants to hear. But so these poor women are dealing with that, and also this like the men are constantly comparing weapons, in a not so shifty metaphor, and when Doc comes to the bar. I think she comes to the bar maybe twice. And uh-huh. One time she's dressed in white, uh-huh. Which is like, okay, why? Like, it's sort of like it almost looks like a wedding dress, kind mm-hmm. of.
Very bridal.
Yeah. And the second time, it's in this tight, short little seersucker gingham. This pink and white gingham.
It's like a slutty picnic tablecloth.
Like a farmer dress.
Yeah.
Like a girl next door kind of thing. And yeah. She does look very much like a little girl in it. Like, she couldn't possibly have agency. She couldn't possibly, you know, be the town's only doctor.
Be a competent, yeah.
Sewn up all of these people. So it's so...
And I don't think she ever... Does she ever go inside the Double Deuce? Because each time she's either hovering on the sort of porch outside, mm-hmm. or she's in her car in the parking lot. Does she ever That's enter? True.
I don't know. But yeah, like, she's...
Maybe at the very end, but...
It's like when men are involved, women are immediately diminished.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that goes back to the film's treatment of masculinity. Mm-hmm. And even, I mean, Brad Wesley, for example... owns everything. He's like a short, balding man, mm-hmm. Who compensates by, you know, owning everything. And he's, I mean, I don't know if this is a coincidence or not, but he's the head of the Jasper Improvement.
Oh yeah, no, that's part of his scam.
Society.
That's part of his
but
scam.
But the sign is an acrostic and it just says jizz on it. Like, he's in charge of the jizz.
Oh,
literally. And
my
I
God.
Like, it might be a coincidence, but
it is not a coincidence.
It can't be. But he's so, I mean, he does flyovers of Emmett's barn with his helicopter. Like, he's just an asshole.
Oh, he drives when he's like driving his fancy car. He does that weaving thing back and forth, so he essentially takes up both lanes of traffic.
Mhm.
By driving erratically,
yeah.
Forcing everyone else off the road. He also has like his entire house is outfitted with like animal like taxidermy.
Yeah, it's gross. He has a trophy room.
He has a trophy room, but it also bleeds out into the front entryway. Like, it's
yeah,
like
it's
not
a trophy
just
house.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. Well, and it seems that his goons are the ones who take everything a little bit too far. Or who really go ham on the sexual innuendo. Like, mm-hmm. Pat, the bartender, who's Wesley's nephew, at one point says to Dalton, you want to kiss and make up. Then, of course, during the fight with Jimmy says, I used to fuck guys like you in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And is very disturbing.
Yeah.
'Cause why would... Why would you say that?
When you're fighting someone for your life.
Yeah.
But I guess it's all like it like classic like reaching back to power and control and
exactly.
personal autonomy. So it's all tied together.
Yeah. So they're using sex
as domination.
As domination.
Yeah.
While still establishing themselves as like the most cis hetero.
Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting.
I'm now thinking about how the, like, niceness of Brad Wesley also rubs off. Like, I feel like he is more successful at the facade of nice because he's always very pleasant. He's always very well spoken.
And he doesn't get his hands dirty.
He's like sort of actually what Dalton wants to be in his ideal. Mm. And is sort of not able to do successfully. And again, that could be a bunch of things, including like privilege and money and age and, you know, whatever. But like the fact that he is able to hold himself apart and sort of dictate when violence is appropriate, when it isn't, to mm-hmm. his goons, mm-hmm. Him and his goons are sort of like, you know, again, the counter to Dalton and his bouncers.
Totally. And Wesley too only loses control at the end when Dalton loses control, when Wesley has kind of decided he's going to fight mm-hmm. Dalton. And even so, when they're in the room with the most taxidermied things, he says the only thing missing is your ass. Yeah. Which is like, he wants to have Dalton's ass stuffed and put on his wall. I was imagining
literally like Patrick Swayze's butt. Yeah. Like on the wall.
Which is like, I'm sure some people would say that's not what he means, but like, isn't it though? Like,
it feels like it is.
It feels like it is. And it goes hand in hand with everything else that his goons have been saying.
And also it's connected to how this, like, this sort of like need to be like something by fighting something.
Yeah.
Where he later says in that same scene, like, I really wanted to fight you or something like that. I was really looking forward to fighting you.
Yes.
Which again echoes the dude at the beginning, like really just like wanting to get in Dalton's face, mm-hmm. wanting to make him mad enough so that he can fight.
Yeah. Which is like, there's no way Wesley could take Dalton.
No.
Normally, like, if Dalton isn't that big, Wesley's even smaller, and he's older, and he's not as muscly.
Mm-mm.
And he's not quick.
No.
So.
No, and he only, like, seems like he has the upper hand because of movie logic in the beginning. Because it's like, oh, the movie needs Dalton to start slowing down now in order to, like, you know, make this a moment of tension. But it's not a believable moment that, like, you know, Brad Wesley could toss Dalton across the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is just so interesting that this movie is so bound up with, like, envy, wanting what the other dude has by also wanting to possess him
mm-hmm.
and be better than him and be him. And, you know, like, it's all bound up together.
Yeah. Like, trying to live up to expectations and, mm-hmm. and yeah. Again, it's Hamlet.
It is Hamlet. Wow. What a smart cookie.
I wish I could take the credit.
I mean, you found it, so you can take most of the credit. Yeah. I wanted to ask you if you think this structure of movie works for the context that it's in. Because, so this is, like, very clearly also, like, you know, structured along the lines of a classic Western.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, mysterious stranger comes into town, there's someone who controls it, there's the big bad boss. You know, shenanigans ensue until a final showdown.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hero liberates the town, essentially, or whatever. But I think since this movie is also so bound up in so that works when it's a very simple social and economic structure, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But when capitalism starts being woven through, like it is here, I feel like things get messier. So I wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So it... I agree with you that this is a very solid Western structure
mm-hmm.
in a lot of ways. It almost reminded me more of a Kurosawa samurai movie, though, which is also very loosely a Western.
Pretty Western, yeah.
But like Yojimbo, for example, has that capitalistic structure, right? You have these two rich factions. Everyone else in the town is poor.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And the factions are fighting each other, and the samurai comes in and kind of pits them against each other so that they just destroy each other, so that he wins anyway. And so I guess it could almost, I mean, I guess it would be, there's only one rich guy, mm-hmm. but it's like,
I mean, Tillman's pretty rich, but he pretends like he isn't.
Yeah, that's true.
He pretends like he's one of the small business owners that, like, has their lives ruined.
Yeah, that's true.
But he isn't.
He isn't.
He's paying so much money to Dalton every night.
Yeah, which is what happens in Yojimbo, too. These guys can't, they don't do their own fighting.
Yeah.
They just pay the samurai to do their fighting for them until one of them learns how to fight unfairly.
Mm-hmm.
But it is this sort of idea of like taking people from the town and getting them to fight other people from the town and getting rid of all the worst people in the town, and then the town is free for all the nice people,
which is a bonker, like, yeah, okay,
and capitalism is destroyed. Ta-da! Back to like, feudalism, like, everyone. Like hooray,
the good old days. Make America feudal again.
I mean,
well, all right. Yeah, yes. No, too dark.
Too dark.
The one I was thinking of was It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh.
Mostly because of, like, you know, the one crusty old, like, sort of more that, like, the one crusty old man who owns the town, and, you know, he does what he wants, and then
the hero's stuck in a game. He doesn't necessarily
Exactly. Yeah. The hero who is like compromised because he is receiving paychecks and, you know, like has all of these other obligations, like sort of caught in this like economic web. So has to make like very compromised choices. Mm. That sometimes support the big bad or you know, work against, and it's always sort of like this dance of, you know, how much can I do without, you know, also losing my job, or, you know, those sorts of like very practical considerations.
No,
and I was just thinking about how, like, yeah, while Dalton is making a lot of money, he is also, like, sort of very realistic. Like, there's sort of, like, everyone wants to make these fights or, like, fighting into sort of, like a thing that means more than it does.
Mm-hmm.
And each time that someone does it, like, there's a bunch of conversations between Hot Doc and Dalton where she's like, I guess someone has to fight, or, you know, like, at least you're doing it so no one else has to, or something. You know, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And he's just like, yeah, no, someone has to pay someone to do it, and I'm the dude who gets paid to do it. Like, he just sort of immediately, like, brings it back to reality and is like, I'm literally doing it for a buck.
Yeah, making it practical instead of emotional.
Yeah, or heroic.
Yeah, or heroic, yeah.
Like, this is not a hero's journey.
Yeah. I mean, although when he has to decide between Wade and the doc, it pretty quickly becomes a hero's journey.
That's true. You know,
but there's that turn, right? He's very rational, very practical, doesn't want to fight people, and then all of a sudden he's ripping guys' throats out and, you know, saving the lady and losing his pal and avenging his pal.
Yeah. I'd like to think it's because of, you know, Emmett's Long John jammies. He took one look at that and was like, I must save this man. So it wasn't actually to defend Hot Doc. It was to defend Emmett and his red underwear.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, I fully believe that Hot Doc could defend herself.
Oh, she fully could.
Yeah.
Yeah, let her do some fisticuffs.
Yeah. Or, like, she has access to narcotics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do what you gotta do.
Oh my god, we haven't even talked about the weirdness that's like she's sort of the ex of Brad Wesley.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Which he legit feels like he owns her.
Yeah.
Even though he's like her granddad.
Yeah. And he watches Dalton and her have sex because, like, oh, the other thing is that, like, Dalton and Brad Wesley live across the pond from each other.
An actual pond.
So they're like, yeah, an actual pond. So they're always, like, eyeing each other across the pond.
Because Dalton does not have curtains.
Or, like...
Or a door.
Doors, really.
No.
Or even windows, really.
It's wide open.
It's a wide open barn.
Yeah.
That he's living. It must smell so terrible.
That's what I said. Yeah. Oh, my
God.
It's so nasty.
It's just, like, a wide open... It's literally just, like, a upper platform.
Yes.
Over barnyard animals.
Yes. And there are lots of barnyard animals.
No, thank you.
No.
It's a wonder to me that Hot Doc went back to his place for sexy times. One look at that, and I would have been like, my place, because yeah. I am a fancy person.
A fancy person with an apartment.
In yeah, town. I have my own home with a door.
Yeah. Well, her connection, so she used to date Wesley, and also the hardware store owner is her uncle who raised her.
Yeah, I believe. It's very incestuous.
So all of these men around town kind of take responsibility for her.
They all feel like they have a piece of her, yeah.
Yeah. And Dalton does too, ultimately, because he believes that only he can save her. And Wesley believes that too.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody asks her.
No one asks her.
But Wesley uses her knowing he would try to save her so that he can kill Wade.
Yeah.
Which is playing on the sort of sexism of it all. Like, Wesley is banking on Dalton believing that this feeble lady needs help.
Who's working in a hospital surrounded by people, mind you.
Yeah, she has a job that she goes to.
Like, the amount of people that would have to be mown down in order to get to her is substantial.
So then the other, like...
So it's just, like, absolutely bonkers to be like, oh, yeah, she's still so weak and delicate. Like, what? I gotta save her.
Or he doesn't care enough to know when she's at work.
Mm-hmm. Also that. I think that's, like, another...
Great.
Yeah.
So he knows nothing about her, but makes everything about him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, this is problematic in the feminism department.
But his mullet's real great, though.
It's true.
We haven't talked about mullets near enough.
No, nor have we talked about...
Mullets are radiant in this
Kelly
movie.
Lynch's delightful backcombing and feathering.
Oh, man. Like, the hair alone in this movie is also Sam Elliott.
Yeah, Sam Elliott has great hair.
The most radiant man.
Yeah, who undoes his pants in public at a table.
Who undoes... Well, not wearing underwear.
Yeah, in front of a woman he has just met.
And is like, look, oh no, not my penis, over here.
Look at this scar or whatever.
That's very low on my hip.
Yeah.
That I couldn't just, like, nestle down my pants a little to show you.
No, no.
I had to fully unzip first.
We Elliots are exhibitionists.
It's a family trait.
It's a family trait.
Your legacy.
Exactly. Can't wait till I get my scar.
No, and his, like, half pony?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Ahead of its
time. Amazing.
Yeah.
What a beautiful, beautiful man.
Definitely hair goals.
For sure. It's really unfair, because, like, I think only Sam Elliott could make Patrick Swayze look like, you know, an uggo. And there's a few moments where it's like,
oh, yeah, he's clearly the hotter one.
He is the hotter one.
Yeah.
And he swoops in and, like, seduces his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And that moment is, like, genuinely hot and sexy where they're dancing in the diner.
Such a daddy.
And I was like, okay, Patrick Swayze and Kelly Lynch don't have near this amount of chemistry.
No.
There's this, like, this is, like, some palpable chemistry happening.
Yeah.
With a dude that, like, they just met. This is amazing.
Yeah. No, the hair
Sam Elliott,
and fashion, Sam Elliott wins it all.
Gone too soon.
Even against Jimmy, who rocks that single earring. Which was so popular.
And the shark tooth.
Oh, yeah, and the shark tooth. That's right.
Jimmy the shark tooth. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, he fought a shark.
He fought a shark.
And then I guess...
Oh, I think Revenant style, he punched a shark until it died, and then he crawled inside the shark and lived in it for a bit, and then took the tooth as a souvenir.
Makes sense.
Of a beautiful weekend together.
It's the only thing that makes sense.
It's the only thing that makes
sense. I defy anyone to tell me otherwise.
Do you have anything else before we go on to moments of joy, or
I don't think I have anything else.
I had nothing else. Okay. No. All right. What were your moments of joy?
Well, definitely the pickup lines. Yeah, I love those. I loved / was very upset about when the goons said to Sam Elliott, "Mind your own business, Dad." I thought, how dare you? But also, it was a
correct.
Good, it was a proper burn. And the other one was Dalton is lying on his car, and Doc shows up, and they didn't know where she was, but he's just lying on his car, and he says, "We've been looking all over for you," when clearly he hasn't moved for the last hour or so.
He's just had a nap there.
Yeah, "We've been looking all over for you."
When, like, you literally live across the pond from where we were.
Like, who's we?
Yeah.
And also, where were you looking? Because you haven't moved from this spot.
Dumb dummies.
Yeah, so that brought me joy.
Oh, that's great.
What about you?
So I have two major, like, so aside from, like, Sam Elliott, because every moment of Sam Elliott was, like, pure bliss for me. Yeah, new gender goals, Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
So there were two sort of aside from that. One was the boob fondling scene. Mostly because it's so awkward, but so joyful. It's weird. True. It's like this moment where... Like, in any other context, I'd be like, that's gross, that's terrible. But it's, like, this one dude and his, like, girlfriend, and they're both like, oh, you wanna, like, they talk to this other random dude on the next door table, and they're like, oh, you wanna kiss him for $20? And this other dude's reaction is, like, what my reaction would be if someone was like, do you wanna kiss some titties right now? He's like, really? It is so, like, pure
childhood joy.
It's childhood joy in that one moment. And, like, any other time that a scene like that would be played as, like, a creepy thing, it'd be like a yeah, right on. But he's just like, can I? I would love to. Like, just, like, you know, stars in his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Just a beautiful, beautiful moment. That then devolves into chaos later on, but because
then doesn't he say, "I haven't got $20"?
I haven't got $20
after he touches them or something.
Yeah, like, no, that's not cool. But
no, she seems fine with it.
Yeah, at least he didn't kiss him.
Yep, no, that's true.
So honors, you know, the letter of the law, not the intent, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
My other pure moment of joy wasn't actually a moment of joy in the movie, but it's been in my mind as I've thought about it later on. Ooh. And I, like, burst out laughing now every time I think about the logistics behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's when one of the bouncers is fucking a woman in the back room.
Uh-huh.
And he is fully naked.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she just has her top pushed up and her pants pushed down.
Yeah.
But this dude, the logistics of it was that they went back there, and he was like, hold on a minute, and got fully naked.
I bet that's something he's
practiced.
In his
workplace.
He has practiced and timed that.
He has taken off at least 3 items of clothing.
Yeah, and she's just like, all right.
She's just like, I'm ready whenever you are. I'm still waiting.
How exciting.
Oh, still on the under. Okay, all right, we're good to go now.
Oh, I bet he was pretty quick at disrobing.
Yeah. It still was just, like, a treat to think about afterwards, though. Like, yeah.
Well, we marveled at how quickly they were able to just uncouple.
Yeah. They're just like, boink.
Yeah. It's like,
that's
okay.
True.
Yeah.
That also is.
It's like, so quick.
And not at all messy.
No. Yeah.
Very,
no.
very tidy.
Yeah.
Nice. Which is the goal. Yeah.
Not around the workroom.
No, for sure not. You're already fully naked in the storeroom.
Keep that in the Jasper Improvement Society.
Oh my God. So now's the time to talk about our theme, the theme corner. It's a new section that I'm spinning on you. A theme where we talk about the theme. So this is obviously very in its baby stages because we just have one movie under our theme. Mm-hmm. So what does this movie tell us about houses? And how do we think it will impact subsequent house movies?
Oh, well, I mean, the word house obviously is so indicative of a certain aesthetic, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you think of the word house, probably you think of where you live.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to me that these places, these like scuzzy bars are called roadhouses.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is some sense of home, mm-hmm. or of some comfort. Or the ability to rest.
It's like a way station. Yeah.
So, yeah, it kind of makes me think of Dalton in his decision not to leave Jasper, too. Like, yeah. The roadhouse has also kind of become his home.
It becomes his home, yeah.
It definitely has more walls and doors than the place.
His actual home.
Yeah.
Well, this is what I was thinking, is that, like, there are, I mean... Like, yeah, a roadhouse is different from an actual house, Joy. But, like, but how there is, like, kind of a lack of like, proper homes or houses in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, Dalton doesn't have a real home, really. Like, that's not a home. And then the only other actual home structure we see is Brad Wesley's.
And that's full of the dead outdoors.
Which is full of the dead outdoors and is, like, also just, like, a very weird place. He has, like, 2 billiard tables in his front entryway.
Yeah, it's very strange.
It's a very weird space that doesn't make, like, any sense at all spatially. So, anyways. But, like, all the, like, actual places of sort of, you know, belonging are businesses.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's the roadhouse, and it is
the hardware store.
Red's hardware store, primarily.
Boats.
Yeah, that are where people, you know, have the meaningful part of their lives, I guess.
Yeah, well, and even Emmett's farm is where he works.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's all these places that people pour their identities into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, you know, in our, you know, late capitalist world is really saying something,
yeah.
isn't it? You know? Our lives are spent at work.
Yeah. Well, even the fact that Red has a, like, a photo of Doc just in the store.
Yeah.
Like, he's treating it like it's not an office photo on his desk. It's like...
No, it's hung up, like, in the main area.
Yeah, which is just kind of like, well, this is where I put my family photos because this is home to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. And I think it's... I mean, Tillman does not consider the Double Deuce a home, I don't think. But Dalton does.
Yeah.
Dalton has his house rules.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of what it is to be nice is to create an atmosphere where people feel comfortable,
mm-hmm. and safe,
at ease.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
So he is, in a sense, trying to build a home.
Mm-hmm. And if not for himself, for other people.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, there's I don't know, like a community that forms.
Yeah.
From that. Oh, interesting. All right. Tune in next time for Theme Corner. title still pending.
What are you talking about? Theme Corner is a pop.
Movie connections. Do you have any movie connections? Yojimbo was a great one.
What? Yojimbo? Yeah. And It's a Wonderful Life, too. I never would have thought of that. But yeah, totally, Mr. Potter.
If Jimmy Stewart was wearing blousy pants, same movie.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly the same movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we were watching it, it wasn't so long ago that I first introduced Aaron to Dirty Dancing. So, there were many comments about comparing Dalton to Johnny in Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
But the movies are really in no way the same.
thank you for that.
Yeah, yeah. Just in case you were wondering if I was going to, you know, do some sort of scholarly gymnastics.
I wanted to know the Hamlet comparison with Dirty Dancing. Okay.
No.
Boo.
Maybe Romeo and Juliet, but...
Maybe.
Yeah.
All right.
Now I gotta watch it again.
Oh, darn it.
Yeah, I think Yojimbo was the one that really came to mind. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, there is a sequel to this movie, Roadhouse 2, Last Call.
I just found out about that.
Which is a movie that, like, online doesn't look like it exists.
Wasn't it made in, like, 1996?
Or, like, maybe the early aughts. Wait, let me look it up. It has an entirely different cast, obviously. and it has... The only person that I recognized was Will Patton.
Oh!
He's in it for some reason.
He's in everything.
He is. Oh, 2006!
2006, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's about Dalton's son, who's an undercover DEA agent, who has to use brute force to save his uncle's bar from ruthless drug runners.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
That sounds truly terrible.
Oh, it looks heinous. And there, yeah, like, it's been scrubbed from the internet. You can't access this movie for love nor money. So there's that, but I was also thinking of other Patrick Swayze movies, so I thought about Point Break.
Oh.
As sort of maybe a similar, like, ish kind of character that has sort of this weird, like, approach to sort of, like, using a form of gentle masculinity to hide actual violence.
I love it. Yes, that's so true.
So, yeah, just, like, different way, kind of a little bit more, like, Eastern mysticism appropriation happening in that one. But, like, yeah, same, like, core, I think, where it's, like, on the surface, I'm, like, this cool, fun dude who's just chill and, like, loving life.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, underneath, it's, like, you know, this roiling mass of rage.
Love it. Catherine Bigelow's best movie.
Oh, for sure. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Oh, were you being sarcastic?
No.
I was being serious.
The Oscar she won for Hurt Locker was actually for Point Break.
Oh my god.
I maintain this.
It was... What a per... That's a perfect movie.
It really is. It is a shame that it's not called Point Break House. Or House Break.
I was just thinking we should immediately jump to a sub-theme of surfing house movies.
And that's how we get down rabbit holes.
That's right, yeah. All right, so in summation, what did we learn? And juiciest bits, juiciest butts.
Well.
Always have a backup car or
Have a backup car. Always buy extra tires up front.
Oh, yeah. And stash those puppies, because you'll be needing them later, for sure.
Doors and windows are not necessary. I suppose.
They are not necessary. No. And real men wear blousy pants.
Yes.
Yeah. The blousier the better.
Blousy shirts.
And blousy shirts.
They come undone. Like, there are no buttons on them. They're just flapping. Open. Yeah. White silk is appropriate everywhere.
Every event, at every location, any time of day.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no season where it's out of style.
Definitely not. And
juiciest butts. There's so many butts to choose from.
So many butts.
Like, it's a wealth of butts.
It is a wealth of
butts. We are awash in a sea of butts.
I feel like I need to give Denise juiciest butt just because she needs like...
Oh, you want Denise to have a little bit of a...
She just needs something nice to happen to her.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. She does need something nice to happen to her. Okay, that's generous of you. I'm just going to go with a predictable choice. It's Patrick Swayze.
I mean, yeah. Obviously.
We see it so often.
Yeah.
Clothed and unclothed.
Yeah. It's a good butt.
It is. You look up juiciest butts in the dictionary. There's a picture of that butt.
And you just know it's Patrick Swayze.
You know it. Of course, because he's wearing those gray, slice-up sweatpants.
course.
I'm like, no one else would wear these. They're super impractical. They're
bespoke sweatpants. They're super impractical.
Like, why would you...
Somebody didn't think those through.
The point of sweatpants is to be stretchy, but then they're tight and also finicky? No, thank you.
And you don't want sweatpants that don't close properly. Like, you...
That's right. They also don't, like, tie up
things
fully.
Like, poking out.
Yeah. No. And they're also very low riding, so...
Yeah, you can't really wear underwear.
This is the real reason why he does Tai Chi, is, like, any more physical activity, and those... That's... Yeah. Things are gonna start popping out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Very dangerous. No, he has to move very slowly.
Yeah. Very intentionally.
Very intentionally. Which is its own kind of meditative practice.
Truly.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a delight.
It has.
I'm glad we're back, baby.
Me too. Welcome back.
Well, we'll chat next time about another house.
If you have any suggestions for themes or movies for themes,
holler into a bottle.
And you know us, just tell
us. Text us.
Text us. And if you don't know us, we will have
I will have an email up soon. Hooray. I will do it very shortly.
There will be a way to contact us.
Yes. All right.
All right.
I've been Charlie.
And I've been Mandy.
See ya.
Bye.